We're holding on Kuf Beis on the Beis. Little path. Let's see. Six lines of the wide line. Yeah. Okay, show it to me later because
I'll show you where it
show
is.
It to
now.
Me. Fine.
No,
show
I'm
it
not
gonna
okay. Show it to you now. I'll show you where it is.
Fine, I'll look at it later. Okay, we learned yesterday, the Gemara had been talking about the whole question of chalitza. What exactly is chalitza? And we finally established that the word chalatz does mean to take off the shoes. So a certain min says to Rav Gamliel, Amad chalitz le'morine. Look, you people are a people that your master, meaning Nebishtha, has done chalitza with you. Which, what's the point? Marsha says, in other words, the min is arguing. When you have, as we've had throughout the Masech, the Yavam does chalitza with the Yavama, then that's it. They can never marry again. They're also to do Yavam after that. He's arguing, you, the Eibishter, and you have done chalitza. You're permanently separated from him. Chas v'shalom. There'll never be another. There'll never be a Gula, etc. Why? Dichtiv, because we have a pasuk. But sinim from Hosea. Sinim of Karim Yehul of Akash of Hashem. They'll go with their sheep and their cattle to search for Hashem. You know, like to bring karbanos. And they won't find him. Chalatz mehem. He did chalitza from them. So chalitza is a permanent separation, which of course, you know, I mean, the goyim for a long time have been trying to claim that, you know, it was one of the claims of Christianity for many years. Even nowadays, you have plenty of them who believe that the Chas v'Shalom rejected the Jewish people and then chose them instead. You know, so this is all of peace with that. Amalei, so Rabbi Gamliel tells him shaita, b'ksiv chalatz lahem. The pasuk doesn't say he did chalitza to them. When you think about it, when chalitza is done in Beis Din, who's doing chalitza to who? Throughout the Masechta, we always use the expression that the yavam was cholitz liyavimtoi. But really, it's the other way around. By a real chalitza, the yavam is standing there passively, and it's the yavama that does all the work. She's the one who undoes the laces and lifts up his foot, etc. Doesn't say, or on the side it says chaltzulai. Cholat mehem. It says he did chalitza from them. Effectively, in other words, it's the equivalent of the other way around. If the yavam stands there and unties the yavama's shoe, the ilu yavama dechalta la'achem midi mishashi isbei. If the yavama stands there and the yavam takes off her shoe, does that do any good? No, of course not. It's meaningless. So, meaning, in other words, Marsha says the vort is Rav Gamliel is telling him you're misunderstanding the pasuk. The pasuk is not saying that Hashem just said, you know what, I can't be bothered with the Jewish people anymore. I'm being cholitz of them. It's the Jewish people are being like a yavama who's rebelling and refusing to do yibum. So like she's saying, she's like standing over there, take off my shoe and let me go. But obviously it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. So the same way, the Jewish people, yes, there have been times when you know, for example, the famous thing in the times of Yechezkel when the Jewish people said, you know what, we can't be bothered anymore. Let's go worship the gods of the other nation. And the Eibishter tells them, absolutely not. Whether you like it or not, I'm your Eibishter and you're bound to me. So Rav Gamliel is telling the same thing. You think it means the Eibishter did chalitza to the Jewish people? No, it means the Jewish people are the ones who are refusing to do Yibum, to be close with the Eibishter. But whatever they do, which they think is chalitza, is not working. It's not accomplishing anything. The connection is still there.
Because the
woman cannot have chalitza done to her shoe, the other way around. And therefore, that's it. The connection is a permanent one. Next, the Mishnah had said about pilya chalitza psilcholo. That the Mishnah had said that if you do chalitza with an anpilya, which we said over there was some kind of fabric sock or something, then the chalitza is possible. So the memory of anpilya lav minobu, which tells us, in other words, effectively what the Mishnah is saying, an anpilya is not considered a shoe. We learned yesterday about the pros and cons of using a shoe versus a sandal, but whatever it is, the Torah said the word na'al, and we learned that therefore it has to be something that can be considered a shoe. This isn't. Utnan nami, and similarly, we have a Mishnah in Shkolim that illustrates the same idea. We learned over there about you have everybody brings the matzah shekel, it's stored in one of the chambers of the Beis Mikdash, and three times a year a person would go in there to take out boxes of coins so they could spend them on the korbanos and whatnot. We learned that in Shkolim, and we learned they had to take precautions to not so much to make sure that the guy doesn't steal, they would pick an honest person, but so there shouldn't be any chashad. on him, so there shouldn't even be a suspicion on him that he's stealing.
Pocket,
right. So Einat Totem Nichnas, so the totem, the one who's going in to take out the truma, is not allowed to go in Loba Paugud Chofus, not with a Paugud, which is a cloak Chofus that has seams, because then you could think like he hid something inside the pocket, inside the seam, yeah. Voloib Anpulia, and he can't be wearing Anpulia, he can't be wearing socks. Same idea, people might think he put money in his socks. It's even more than that. We looked over there in the Gemara, for example, that they want to make sure that they want to make sure he's not going to going to put money in his mouth. So they make him talk. They talk with him all the time while he's from when he goes in till he's done to make sure that there's absolutely no chad. The Yisim Nikim, Hashem and Israel. You got to be clean not only in the eyes of Eidoshe but in the eyes of other people. It's not necessarily but other people might be. Anyway, the Ein Tzorach Lema Minogal Sandal. And needless to say, the Mishnah continues, you can't go in to take out the Trumas Alishka wearing shoes or sandals. L'fishay nechnasim minov sandal azara, because anyway, you can't wear shoes or sandals to go into the azara or the harabayis, whatever. So therefore, we see that the Mishnah is distinguishing over there also between an apilia versus a minov sandal. However, or a minu, but I have a contradiction. In the dinim of Yom Kippur, echad minov a sandal v'anpilia, whether a shoe or a sandal or an anpilia, a sock, lo yitayo behem lemibayis lebayis v'lemimita lemita. You're not allowed to walk around in them on Yom Kippur, not from one house to another, and not even from one bed to another within the house. So, what? That anpilia we said is a sock.
One sock on one foot, one sandal on the other.
No, not on your paper. No, on your paper, you can't. No, we mean even on one foot. But the point is that the Braisa seems to be saying that minol and sandal and anpilya are all on the same level. Now, why? We know that the dinim of Yom Kippur are you're also in the illus of sandal. You're not allowed to wear sandals, so okay, shoes as well. According to our Mishnah, according to the Mishnah, Shkalim Anpulia is a different kind of thing. It's not made out of leather. So why is that Mishnah, not that Braisa, about Yom Kippur, saying that they're the same? Amar Abaya, the case is the Isbek Sisi. The case over there for Yom Kippur is it's talking about that you have little pieces of soft fluff in there to make it more fluffy, to make it more comfortable. Or Mishum Tainug, the reason why you can't wear the Anpilia then is not because of the shoe, not because it itself is a shoe, but because it's too comfortable, basically, with the padding inside. So what? Why? Where do you ever find that it's? I mean, we know the whole idea of Yom Kippur is Ta'anu Esnaf Shaseichem, but still, where do you ever hear that if it's Ta'anu, but it's not a Minol, it's not something that's considered La Halacha, a shoe, that it should be Aser on Yom Kippur? Well, Rabbi Barapuna, Korach Sudra Akari, but nothing. We find, for example, that Rabbi Barapuna used to wrap a cloth around his feet, and he would go out that way, even though that way the cloth is protecting his feet, so he's not actually walking on the bare ground on the rocks or whatever, so he has tainug from the softness of it, it was still mutter. He would tie a sudur, a handkerchief or a scarf or something, around his feet. Akare on his feet. So you see, then, it's not a matter of tainug or not. As long as it's not a minol, it's not a problem. So why? So back to the question, why is Anpilia there a problem? Elam Rava, like Kasha, Kanban Pilia shall Kanban Pilia shall begin. The one about Yom Kippur is talking about an anpilya made out of leather. So yes, it's not a shoe, it's not a sandal, it's a slipper, but it's made out of leather, so it's the same problem all over again. Kanban anpilya shel beged, whereas our Mishnah, and I guess and the one in Shkalim as well, are talking about an anpilya made out of cloth, a cloth sock. Hachanami Mistabra, okay, the Gemara points out that makes sense. Di'ilo tema hachi, because otherwise you would anyway have like Kasha Yom Kippurim, Yom Kippurim. Because if you don't say that the Anpilia there that's saying is also on Yom Kippur is Davka, one made out of leather, then anyway you can have a contradiction between two Braises on the Dinim of Yom Kippur. The Tanya. One Braise said, we have the one Braise that said that you're not allowed to wear Anpilia, but we have another one that says, lo yitayel odem b'kud kisin b'seich beis. A person is not allowed to walk around his house wearing kud kisin. Rashi defines over here kudakisin, he uses a Belash and Ashkenaz in German, it's called underschuch, an undershoe. You've heard of overshoes, like you put galoshes on your shoes when it's wet. This is the other way around, an undershoe. It's made out of leather, so it's waterproof. You put it on your foot, and then you put on your regular shoe, and that way, if it's wet weather, your foot is protected. But it's made out of leather, so it's the same issue. So the Braisa says you can't walk around in code kissing inside your house. But you can walk around in Anpilia in your house. So you have one Braisa says Anpilia is also, and one says that it's mutter. Obviously, it must be. One's talking one's leather, one's cloth. Shmamina, good, that proves it. Tanya Kavasei de Rava, we have a braisa that supports what Rava said, that only an ampulia made out of leather would be an issue on that that an ampulia, that the ampulia of our Mishnah has to be one made out of cloth, not like puzzle. Whereas an ampulia made out of leather, you would be able to use for chalitza, because leather. The braisa says, chalitza b'minal ha'nifram, if she does chalitza with a torn shoe, but it's torn, but still shechayfa es reva gagel, it still covers most of the foot. Or a sandal on nifchas from a kabbalah sereger egel, or a sandal that's partially broken but it still holds most of the foot. Rashi on Amud Aleph, by the way, I mentioned the reason why there's the difference choifer versus makabel. Why the difference of expression? A shoe is soft. Rashi's shit is that the difference is a shoe is soft and a sandal is hard. So therefore, it makes more sense to speak of it covering the foot. A sandal is hard, so it makes more sense not so much to talk about covering, but like it holds the foot, like a container. Anyway. The sandal shall sham, shall sieve, or if you use a sandal made out of sham, which is I think cork, shall sieve, or vines, the kind of vines that grows around palm trees or something, or the kavakitea, you use the wooden leg of a person who has his leg amputated, the moik, or with a slipper. We had an Amud Aleph, Rashi had said that the Arabic word for shoes is moik. B'smichas haraglayim, or in what you use to hold up your feet. The Rashi describes you have people who their feet don't work. Nowadays they'd be in a wheelchair. In those times they didn't have wheelchairs. Such a person would move around on his hands. He'd walk on he'd crawl on his hands basically. He'd dragging his feet behind him. What would he do for his feet? He would so that at least he can put some of his weight on him. He would protect him with leather coverings. Or banpilia shall or with an anpilia with these slippers made out of leather, vachalitzas min agadol, or she does chalitza from or the yavam is a gadol, he's over by mitzvah and has shtei sairus, ben omed ben yoshe ben muta, regardless of whether he's standing, sitting, or leaning, either way, in any case the chalitza is kosher, or vachalitzas min asuma, or she does chalitza with a blind yavam, in all those cases chalitza sekshera. Now, why would we think there should be an issue with standing or sitting or whatever? So Tosfos says the reason is because chalitza is like a gemar din, it's like a judgment in Beis Din. So you would think he has to stand. The chiddush is that not. As far as the blind one, also Tosfos points out that number one, the pasuk had said that the chalitza has to be done la'enei azkenim, but in front of the eyes of the skenim. We learned at the beginning of the parak that therefore they can't be blind. So you would think maybe the same thing would apply to the yavam. Also, the pasuk continues with yoka b'fanav, that she spits in front of him on the ground. So you would think he has to be able to see it. The chiddush is that not. Having said that, though, there are the Rambam I think holds that. This that we're saying that it's kosher if he's sitting or leaning and if he's blind is only b'di'evet. L'chila, it should not be done. So, which would mean, practically speaking, according to the Rambam, I guess that would mean if he's the only yavam and yibum can't be done, then the less greater you would do chalitza so she's left in aguna. But otherwise, have one of the other brothers do it. Anyway, continues the b'raisa. Avol b'minal aniv. That's the thing. We would have thought that since we're saying this Kanim have to see, maybe the Yavam has to see also. The Chiddush is that not. But again, according to the Rambam, it's only b'di'evet. Avol b'minal anifram, but continues the Braisa, if you use a shoe that's so torn, she'enim akabal osuroi v'regel, it doesn't even cover most of the foot, or b'sandal hanifchas she'enim akabal osuroi v'regel, or a sandal that's broken and doesn't even hold most of the foot, or with the things that the scribble uses to hold up his hand. Again, like we just talked about, this guy who crawls around on his hands and drags his feet behind him, he has holders kind of for his hands as well, but those aren't considered shoes of any kind. Or you use an ampilia, a sock made out of cloth, or she does chalitza with a cotton. In all those cases, chalitza psula. So the chalitza is possible. So we see we had a lot of details in the braisa, but the important one for our purposes is that there's a difference between the braisa clearly made a distinction between anpilya shal or and anpilya shal beged. One's kosher, maybe the chalitza, maybe the yevid, whatever, but at least it's kosher. The other one is completely possible. So we see, therefore, the same thing when it comes to the difference between our Mishnah and the one in Shkolim versus the Braisa. By Yom Kippur, evidently we see that Rava is right, and the difference is that in our Mishnah and in Shkolim they're made out of cloth, and in the Braisa by Yom Kippur, the first Braisa, it's made out of leather. You have to wait till it becomes a gadol, yeah. Right.
From this Braisa, it can be crippled and still.
Right. Actually, now the truth is that's not so simple. We learned at the beginning of the parak, we said cholta min ha'akuba, that if she does chalitza from the lower leg, then the chalitza is kosher. And we mentioned then that Rashi and other Rishonim argue what that means. Does that mean Rashi said it meant that the guy has his foot amputated, but she can still do the chalitza by untying the shoe off the remaining part of his leg, off the stump? Whereas the other Mepharshim say it's talking about where the straps are tied, above the knee or below the knee, which is why they were careful that the straps are tied below the knee to have, because it was not a problem. So according to those other Rishonim, yes, it could be a problem over here if the guy's a cripple, especially because the Gemara is going to point out soon that he has to put his foot solidly on the ground. So those Rishonim would say that what we mean here is, if let's say, so you have the Yavam himself is a healthy man, he has a healthy right foot. He borrows, let's say, one of these leather things from a cripple and uses that as a chalitza shoe. So we're saying that would be fine if it was the foot one, but not if it was the hand one. So that's the thing. Not according to those Rishonim, not that the Braisa is saying that the cripple himself can do chalitza, but rather we're saying that a healthy yavam, a non-cripple, can borrow one of these, or one of these leg protectors, or the wooden leg, or what have you, and use that for chalitza.
That
would be what the Braisa is saying. Okay. Now, the Braisa had mentioned one of the things that it mentioned was kabakiteya, the wooden leg of a cripple, of an amputee. That seems to be only according to the mayor. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Shabbos, Hakiteya Yotze B'Kav Shaloi, an amputee is allowed to go out with his wooden leg, give it a mayor, Rabbi Yossi Oyser, whereas Rabbi Yossi says it's Oster. Evidently then, the mayor holds that it's considered a shoe, and therefore he can wear it on Shabbos, same as a regular person can wear their shoes, whereas Rabbi Yossi does not consider it a shoe, and therefore he says no. Ban pilya shall beg it. I saw on the rabbanon. But then when the Braisa mentioned that a cloth sock is possible, that would be according to the rabbanon, because we learned yesterday about this limud from Vayin Olech Tachash, from I made you shoes out of Tachash leather, that we see that a shoe in halacha has to be made out of leather. Rashi points out Reb Meir does not hold of that derasha. According to Reb Meir, any material would be kosher. So we have a contradiction then. The Braisa first seems to be saying, according to the mayor, that a wooden leg is fine, because like a shoe, but then we're saying that a sock is possible. So what is it? Amar Abayim, it is safer Rabbanon, Reishin Nami Rabbanon. Okay, well, since the part about the sock is according to the Rabbanon, Reishin Nami Rabbanon, necessarily then we have to say the earlier part of the Braisa that mentioned the wooden leg would also be according to the Rabbanon. So how do we figure it? V'reisha b'mechupa ur. The ratio, when it's talking about the wooden leg, it means that the wood is covered with leather. So therefore, even according to Rabbi Yossi, it would be considered a shoe. So what? Aval ein mechupa ur my apostle. So what are you implying then? What would the Braisa be implying then? That if it was not covered with leather, it would be possible. Well, then, then why does the Sefer bother bringing in the case of a cloth sock? Let the Braisa make a distinction within wooden legs themselves. When is the wooden leg kosher if it's covered with leather? Aval ein mechupa ur possible. And then we'd automatically understand that a cloth sock is also possible. Elam or Rava? So no, Rava says it's the other way around. The duration of Meir, Sefer Nami Reb Meir. Since we have to say that the first part is according to the mayor, the part about the wooden leg, evidently is according to the mayor, because we said we can't really make this distinction between whether it's covered with leather or not. According to the mayor, even if it's only a wooden leg, no leather, it would still be fine. We have to say sefer nami reb mayor. We have to say that the sefer about the cloth sock is also according to the mayor. Why does he say that if he doesn't hold of the din by tachash? Because hay megin b'hay le megin. Because the difference is a wooden leg at least protects the foot. A cloth sock doesn't even do that. That's why you're allowed to wear cloth socks on Yom Kippur, for example. So he might not hold that it needs to be al derech like tachash, that it has to be made out of leather, but at least it has to be something that actually protects the foot.
Sure.
Similar to what we said yesterday, why you can't use a shoe made out of hair, because we said it's not called a nal, it's called a krukah. It doesn't really protect the foot properly. Similar idea.
That's the strong covering.
Yeah. Amar Meimer. Another din about chalitza. Haiman de chalitza tzarich l'midchasei l'karei. When chalitza is being done, the yavam has to press his foot against the ground. Why is that? So mafarshim explain, the vort is that we're saying the yavam has to do the complete chalitza. Part of the process of chalit, when a person normally takes off their shoe, what do? You untie the laces, you pick up your foot, and you shake it off, or you take it off, or whatever. So here it has to be that she does all those things. So therefore, she has to lift up the foot. It can't be that he's helping her by lifting it up, otherwise he's doing part of the chalitza, and it'll be possible. So therefore, he...
standing, putting weight down.
No, so we don't mean he necessarily puts a lot of weight on it, but he has to, like, firmly put it on the ground, rather than holding it in the air. Which actually goes back to this business about standing and sitting. That's the question. Amalei Rav Ashi Lameima Valtanya Ben Omed Ben Yosha Ben Muta. Didn't we just say before that you can do chalitza whether the yavam is standing, sitting, or leaning? And if he's standing or sitting, how is he pressing his foot down on the ground? Sorry, if he's sitting or leaning especially, how is he pressing his foot on the ground? The answer is, Ema Ulo Olam Dedochis Lekare. Yeah, you could say it's kosher, whatever position he's in, as long as he puts his foot firmly on the ground. Yeah, he could do it when he's mixing.
He could lie on the ground.
I'm sharing, yeah, you'll put down,
but yeah. But the same thing Mutta also, yeah. I mean, again, the fact of the matter is that in Shulchan Aruch it says preferably the Yavam should be standing, or even if he's leaning a little bit, he shouldn't be leaning, just like in the Din of Shemoneh Esrei, he shouldn't be leaning so hard against something that if he took it away, he would fall, because then that's not really considered standing. And even though we said it's kosher, if he's leaning, that's a bit of a different thing. Some of the Rishonim explain instead that this business about Midchasei Lekarei also includes this idea that we were talking about, that he can't be a cripple. Because if he is, then he can't press his foot down on the ground. Similar idea, yeah.
Then?
So then, according to that, the question is, the part of the question is also that Mefarshim deal with is, are we saying it has to be that he must limit chasei lekarei, or is it that even b'diavad it would be possible if not, or is it only a lachatchila thing? That's part of the issue. That's part of the issue as well. The Amar Amemer, and Amemer says another din, Haiman demaski alechse dekarei, if somebody walks on the top of their foot. The meaning, in other words, there's a condition where, like, the person's foot is twisted. Normally a person's foot is like this. You can have a deformity where a person's foot is twisted, and instead they walk on what would normally be the top part of the foot.
Yeah,
okay. Loy, then he cannot do chalitza. Now, why is that? So Rashi says the reason is because the chalitza has to be done. We learned the pasuk says may al ragla. It has to be done from on his foot. If he walks like that, then it's not really on his foot.
The bottom is the top, and the top is the top
of the right. The Rambam gives a different reason. The Rambam says because based on what we just said, they have to press his foot against the ground like this. He can't do that. And for the same reason, the Rambam adds another thing, which actually the Ravid disagrees with. If the guy walks on tiptoe, if he has a deformity in his feet that causes him to walk on tiptoe, again, he can't press his heel really against the ground, same problem.
Yeah.
And we said yesterday, once she takes it off the heel, then that's accomplished, yeah. No, but we're talking about the right leg. Throughout all this, we're talking about the right leg. We're gonna learn tomorrow or the next day, Be'ez Hashem, if there's actually a machlokes tanoim, whether you can do chalitza with the left foot. The halacha is enough, though. The halacha is enough to be the right foot. So Rav Ashi asked Amemer, why? Didn't we learn before about the pads that the cripple uses over there on his feet? He said you can do smicha with them. So that's what I mentioned before in the name of Rosh. It's actually right here in the Gemara. Lab cholitz beyu. Doesn't it mean that we're talking about the cripple himself is using them? So we see even though he can't walk normally on his feet, nevertheless the cholitz is kosher. So he says, no, loy diyov lo la'achav cholitz. No, the b'naisa might have meant that he gives it to somebody else and he does chalitza with them. So no proof, though, that a cripple can do chalitza. Omer of Ashi, Lamai de Komer Amemer.
That's what we said previously.
Yeah, that's what we said previously. It's now the Gemara. So Lamai de Komer Amemer, according to what Amemer says, that if a person walks on the back of their foot, then they can't do chalitza. It comes out Lav bar uba chalitz, Lav bar kipa chalitz. That neither bar uba nor bar kifuf is going to be able to do chalitza. Who are these guys? These are. We learned at the end of Moed Katan that we had a piece of Agadah over there that discussed the Petiris of many of the Chachamim, and there was one part over there where Rav Ashi asks these two guys, Bar Uva and Bar Kifuf, actually the Gemara there had a slightly different gear set of the names or whatever. They were both famous Safdanim. They were famous orators at the famous speech zuggers at funerals. So one time Rav Ashi asked them, "What are you going to say at my funeral?" And they told him what they thought they should say. And the Gemara says it made Rav Ashi feel bad. Why did it make him feel bad? So one idea was that the Gemara had mentioned over there that they're talking about as though like his death is a punishment, and the death of a tzaddik is not a punishment. It goes up to a higher madriga. And also some of the mafarshim say that b'chalal they should have said what are you talking about? What are you going to say? You labai alavai, you should live for a long time. So whatever it was, the Gemara says that Rav Ashi felt bad, and the kpeda of a tzaddik has an effect on a person. So therefore, they wound up ishapchu karayu, their feet got overturned, so they weren't able to stand straight, and therefore they couldn't make it to Levaya anyway to give the speech. So therefore, based on that, Rav Ashi is saying these two guys have this condition, so you should know. There's two examples of people who actually are shayach to this din of a meimer. They can't stand on the bottoms of their feet anymore because of this. Therefore, they wouldn't be able to do chalitza.
It's ironical they did something bad with their mouth. They were punished with it.
Right. So we learned over there, I think Marashad said the idea was that this way the punishment was that maybe Rashi said over there, I don't remember, but the punishment was, therefore they're not able to stand there by a Levaya to give the speeches.
That's
the concern. Yeah. Then the Mishnah said, Mina ha-kubo al-mata v'chulo, that the Mishnah made a distinction between whether the chalitza is done below from the akuba, which is the knee, and down. Or up, and again, we said Rashi says that that's talking about if the leg is amputated above or below the knee, and the other Rishonim say it's talking about where the straps are tied above or below the knee. Question is, Ramini, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. We learned in Chagiga, Raglayim Prat Labale Kabin, that when it says Regolim, rather, when it's Sholosh Regolim talking with Hashanah, that you have Sholosh, that we have three times a year, you have to go up on foot to the Beis Mikdash, that means Regolim is as opposed to people who have wooden legs. Who have a foot amputated? So you see that there the word raglayim completely eliminates anybody who has an amputated foot. So why are we saying over here that such a person can do chalitza as long as it's below the knee? The answer is shiny hachatachtiv me'al raglay. Okay, but the difference is here it doesn't say raglay; it says me'al raglay from above his foot. So as long as there's something that left that can be considered above the foot, namely the lower leg, then you're good. Okay, the question is, Yachal Mailamin Akubanami, fine, then in that case, above the knee, also same thing. And the answer is, Me'al, Vlay Me'al, the Me'al. As I said before, in other contexts, we said the Torah says it has to be from above the foot, not from above something which is above the foot. If you're talking about that it's amputated all the way till above the knee, or that the straps are tied till all the way above the knee, then already it's above something which is above the foot.
Between the knee and the foot,
that's fine. Amar Papa, Shma Mina, you can see from this din a detail of anatomy. Hai istivira ad aranachis. The istivira goes all the way down to the ground. What's the istivira? Rashi says it means the ankle bone. You have, if you look at an anatomy book, if you look at a diagram of the bones of the human foot, you have the bones of the lower, you have the bones of the lower leg, two of them. Then right below that, you have a more or less vertical bone, in English it's called the talus. The ankle bone, and then you have the various bones, and then you have the various bones of the foot. So the Papa is saying that talus has to be something that directly goes all the way down to the ground. There's nothing else below it. I saw it, based on the din of the hero of Chalitza, where he's going to explain why in a second. Rabbi Hai Goin explains a little differently. He says that the istavira we're talking about over here is actually like if this is the ankle, we're talking about like these bones over here. They were the ones that go from the metatarsals or whatever, that go from the ankle till the beginning of the toes.
The talus never goes to the ground unless there's a...
Ah, so one second. Why? The Isak is a mixed pusik, because if you're going to argue that there's something between the talus or between the metatarsals or whatever on the ground, then you have a problem. Havalei du me'al, then that itself is something above the foot. You have the foot itself. You have the talus, which is above that. The shoika, me'al de me'al. And the shoik, the lower leg, would be above what's above. and then it would be possible even if the straps were on the shoik. The fact that we're saying the straps are kosher if they're on the shoik implies that there's nothing else between you have the shoik, you have the ankle bone, and that's it. Nothing below that. The shoik is the lower leg. The lower leg, and I think it's called the shin. However, Amar Rav Ashi, after Mutema, Mifsik Pasik, no, not necessarily. You could say that it is actually separated, and anatomically it is. There is something below the talus. There's the, I forget the name of it, but there's the actual bone that you feel sticking out, that you feel sticking out at the back of your heel. But it's not a problem, because anything that's at the same level of the foot is considered part of the foot. The talus is at the same level as the top of the foot. So therefore, it's not considered me'al, it's not something on top of the foot. It's an essential part of the foot. So yes, the shoik can be considered me'al of that.
The talus is the ankle.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, yeah. So yeah, Rapapa and Rav Ashi.
So it's considered...
So we're saying, Rav Ashi is pointing out, the fact is the talus does not reach all the way down to the ground,
right,
because you have the calcaneum below it,
right,
but it doesn't matter. The talus is still considered part of the foot, because you have, here's the top of the foot, and the talus is here, in the ankle. It's along the same level, so therefore it's still considered part of the foot. It's not considered me'al. It's not considered on top of something else. Then the Mishnah continued, min ha'akubo l'mayla, that if it's above the knee, then it's possible. Master of Kahana, so Rav Kahana says, I have a contradiction. You're telling me the word regal only means up to the knee? I can show you a pasuk that says that where the word regal means way above that. Over shil yasa yotzis ben ragla. The pasuk talks about a woman who's given birth in her shilya, her fetus, that comes out from between her raglayim, between her feet. It comes out from higher up, of course, between her thighs, and you see it's still called raglayim. I'm going to buy it. No, that's because B'shar Shekaras Leilad, when a woman is getting ready to give birth, how does she position herself? She presses her heels against her thighs, and that's how she gives birth. Yes, the child literally comes out from between the heels.
The knees are bent up.
Okay. How about another pasuk? Loi also raglo, loi also svamai. We learned earlier in the Masechta, and we learned in Shabbos about Mephibosheth, the son of Yonasan, David's friend. That we had a whole story over there about how David was looking for descendants of Yonasan to do chesed with them. He wound up he found Mephibosheth. He invited him to always eat at his table, etc. And then we learned that later on, when David was running away from Absalom, So Mephibosheth didn't go along with him. And later on, when David finally came back after the whole rebellion was over, so Mephibosheth comes out looking very unkempt. He hadn't done up his feet. And what does it mean, do up his feet? Rashi says over here, it means that the part of a man's normal grooming in those days would be to trim the hair, his pubic hair, which is between his thighs. Loi also svamai, and he hadn't trimmed his mustache. And the pasuk goes on to say over there that David suspected that we learned previously that the Gemara has a whole discussion when did David incorrectly accept Lashon Hara about Mephibosheth, that the reason he looks so unkempt is because he's sad that David is coming back, or if I care, is it that all this time he's been sad that David is away, and that's why all this time he let himself go. Either way, we see that the word raglav refers to his size. So you see the rego can mean much higher up.
It's
just referring to pubic hair, which is between the thighs, yeah.
How did he know that he didn't have pubic hair?
No, he didn't. He lifted it up to tell. But part of a person's normal grooming in those days would be to do that. The pasuk is telling us that he hadn't done. The David could see that he hadn't trimmed his mustache, so maybe David assumed on that basis that he hadn't done further down either. But whatever the pasuk is telling us, anyway. So we see that regal means higher up. Means much higher up. The answer is lishnamalia. Yeah, but that's the Torah is using a nicer expression. It's saying regal, meaning a more intimate area, but to use clean language, to be discreet. Yeah. Okay, Toshma, I have another pasuk. Vayavish Shaul lahosech es raglav. You have a pasuk that mentions that Shaul went into a cave to cover his feet, meaning to go to the bathroom. This is the famous story over there where David was hiding in the back of the same cave and cut off the corner of his coat, etc. And again, the answer is lishnamalia. Now, Toshma, we have about another pasuk by Egloin over there. Ehud comes to Egloin, the king of Moab. He says, I have a message to you from the Ebishter. Egloin gets up. He was a very fat man. And Ehud pulls out his sword and stabs him. Later, Ehud locks the doors and escapes. Egloin's guys notice the door is locked. They don't know what's going on, but they figure, you know what, he's probably going to the bathroom. He's probably covering his feet in the cool chamber over there. He's going to the bathroom, in other words. So again, you see that Raglav means his personal, I mean, means his intimate areas, his genitals. And again, the answer is Lishna Malia. Now, why does the Gemara have to ask the same question and give the same answer over and over? So it's three times already, and we're going to have a fourth one now. So the Aruch HaNer explains, because each time there's a chiddush over the previous one. First, by Mifiboshes, we asked and we said Lishna Malia. Then we said, okay, by Mifiboshes, Mela, he was a tzaddik. How about by Shaul? He wasn't such a tzaddik. He's pursuing David all the time, etc. Maybe the Pasuk's not being so careful about his covered. No, nevertheless, the Pasuk is still being careful and then using Lishna Malia. Okay, how about Eglon? He was a guy. Okay, but even he deserves some cover. He got up in honor when Eir tells him, I have a message from Eivishter, he gets up out of respect. That was because he had that close, but because of that later, that Rus was his descendant. So therefore he also deserves a Eglon, yeah. So therefore he also deserves respect. And now the next one.
So the
Chiddush in every one is like, even though you would think there's less of a reason for the Torah to be, for the Pasuk to be using a euphemistic language out of respect, nevertheless in each case there is a Chiddush. Yeah. Toshma. Bein Raglei Achola. How about another one? Bein Raglei Achola. It says by when Sisra after the battle with Devorah and Barak, Sisra the Kenani general runs away. He winds up in the tent of Yoel Eishes Chever Akeni, who we figured it's a safe place where he can hide out. What happens? The pasuk says that she gave him milk to drink, and then he lay down and she covered him with a blanket, and then once he was safely asleep, she knocked a tent nail into his head and killed him.
We
may have talked about it, but now actually we're going to have an interesting little discussion about it. So now the pasuk uses the expression in Shirat Devorah when Devorah describes poetically what happened. She says Bein Raglei Hachola. It says between her feet he fell down. He fell down dead. And the Gemara is going to explain in a second, actually, that it doesn't just mean he fell down dead. What the Pasuk is actually saying is that before he died, he forced himself on Yael, or maybe not even forced himself. Tosfos seems to say that she, like, seduced him into having relations with her, so that she'll weaken him, and that way she'll be able to kill him in order to save the whole Jewish people. And it says, Bein Raglel, where, again, well, obviously we're not talking about feet, we're talking about a different area. And again, the answer is Lishna Malia.
Yeah.
In each of these cases, it's Lishna Malia. Amr Rabbi Yechanan, speaking of this, Sheva Be'ilos Baal Oysa Rasha Ba'Osayim, that Rasha, Sisra, had relations with her seven times that day before it finally tired him out enough to go to sleep. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, Bein Ragleha Kora Nofal Shachav, between her legs, he bent down, he fell down, he lay. Bein Ragleha Kora Nofal, between her feet, he bent down and he fell. Ba'asher Kora, where he bent down, Sham Nofal, there he fell, Shadud, destroyed. See, there's seven expressions of falling and Kora Nofal Shachav, Kora Nofal, and Kora Nofal. So seven times. The Gemara asks, welcome to Tanya Ma'avera. Yoel is a tzaddikus. Isn't she having Hana from an Avera? She's a married woman. And he's a guy. Now Tosfos asks, welcome to Tanya Ma'avera. Ask a better question. Yehorig Bal Yaver. But is Zorah Gilad Ayes and Shvichus Damim is Yehorig Bal Yaver. So Tosfos says, okay, that's not the Gemara's question, because the Gemara, first of all, you have the general rule, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, that when it comes to Arias, the woman is a passive partner, Esther Taka Olam Havoi, so she Taka does not have to be Moshe Nefesh. Number two, Tosfos says that actually it wasn't a case over here where he forced himself on her. She actually seduced him in order to weaken him so that she'll be able to kill him and save the Jewish people. So the question really is, given that, why is the pasuk praising her to the extent that the pasuk starts off with Tevorach minoshim yoel eshes chever akeni minoshim ba'oil tevorach. She should be mentioned more than other women who are in the tents. Now, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. The Gemara in Nazir says that it means that she was in a way even greater than the imahos, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, who all lived in tents. So the question is, why is she greater than them if, after all, she had hana from Avraham? The answer is Amar Abyechim, Shem Minyachai, because she didn't have an offer made. Kol Tevasim Shal Rishayim, Ra He Eitz Al Tzadikim. Whenever the Rishayim think they're doing good for somebody, but the Tzadikim consider it a bad thing. The Tzadikim hate the Rishayim. Rashi says it's disgusting for them to have an offer from the Rishayim. Like in Tanya the other day, the Altadeva was talking about the idea that a Tzadik Gomer hates, utterly hates evil, utterly hates the Klippus. So similar idea over here. A tzaddik is trying to benefit a rasha. A rasha is trying to benefit a tzaddik. The tzaddik doesn't get any anol from it. Adarava, it bothers him. Shenema, as you find that the Eibishter tells Lavan, he shamalach apet dabeim Yaakov mitoh badra. Be careful that you don't talk to Yaakov good or bad. Even you're good at that. Well, that's the question. Okay, I can understand why the Abish is telling him not to talk bad to Yaakov. Why shouldn't he say anything good to him? Yeah, what? Means that I can understand. So you can see that even Lavan's good is going to be bad for Yaakov. So the question is, in what way exactly is it bad? Okay, in the case of Lavan and Yaakov, you can understand what the problem would be. In the course of the conversation, Lavan is likely to mention his gods, his getches, as in fact he did. He mentioned Lavan going after Esalitai. And some of the Mephoroshim explain, actually, I think Marsha explains in Horius, where this Gemara also is, that it's not just talking about, mentioning them. It may also be that he's going to try to make Yaakov swear by them. And in fact, we find at the end of the parasha over there that he says, Elekei Avraham, Elekei Nachor Yishpidu Beneinu, that I want the God of Avraham and Abdul the God of Nachor to judge between us. So I can understand then, fine, what would be the problem, what's the good, nice phrases that the Lavan's going to speak are going to be disgusting to Yaakov. Ella hocha mai ra, Yaakov, what's the ra? And the answer is, dechashadi bel zuhama, because when Sisera has relations with her, he brings into her zuhama, a ruchni yistikatuma. When the Nachash came to Chava, and the expression Baal literally means had relations with. Rashi explains on the Gemara in Shabbos, where we had this as well, that yes, the pasuk after the Chatei Tzedas, when the Eved asks Chava, what did you do? How could you have done this? She says, Hanachash hishi'ani va'oichel. It literally means the snake tricked me or convinced me, and so I ate. But Rashi explains that hishi'ani is also Meloshin Nisuin. Because the snake actually in some way or other had relations with her. And hitubah zuama, he put a ruchni stick of filth into her. So later on, Yisrael shamdu al Har Sinai pasko zuama. So the Jewish people who stood by Har Sinai, that took away the zuama. Whereas the goyim did not stand by Har Sinai, this zuama didn't go away from them. So yes, when Sisera is with Yoel, then it causes the zuama. What exactly happened over here? Mepharshim have a bit of a field day with this whole thing about Yoel and Sisera, especially because there's a medrash actually that implies the other way around. That implies that Yoel was remained to her, that Sisera never ended up being the Kameh. So how does that fit with our Gemara over here? So there's a bunch of different answers. One of them being that originally she told him basically stay away from me. But then essentially she realized she has this opportunity over here, or I think that Yon Yaakov says at that point he started forcing himself on her, and she realized, you know what, I have a good opportunity here, let's let it go, something like that. That's why she didn't like it, right? But that's where, there also was Ra, he ate a tzaddikim, yeah. But the difference is over there, there's no reason for us to assume that Esther had Hana from it. Here, again, according to Tosfos, that Yoel actually talked him into it, there's more reason to think that she had Hana. And that's the answer is, for a tzaddik, having Hana like that is not a Hana at all. It was a tzaddik.
Well,
that's right. There is such a medrash that said that it wasn't really Esther herself. Was it? Yeah, okay. Right. Well, we learned that, in Megillah. We had a whole discussion when we learned Megillah back in the summer. We had a whole discussion about the pros and cons of it. Right. Yeah. Next, the Mishnah continued. Chalitza b'minyan she'eino shelo'i v'chola, if she does chalitza with a shoe that doesn't belong to the yavam, and he said it's still good. Turn on our bottom. We learn on a braisa naloi. When the pasuk says his shoe, ein li ela naloi. So you would only know from that that's the yavam's own shoe. Now she'll call adam minayin. How do we know it's good even if it's anybody else's shoe? Now we come welcome. Since the pasuk says now twice, just like we said yesterday, that it includes other kinds of leather other than tachash, same idea, it includes other shoes other than the yavam.
These and others.
Yeah. Im kein matam lemon nahaloi, so why does it say his shoe? It means nahaloi haroi loi, it has to be a shoe that's suitable for him. Prat legadol shein yachal halach boi, which means to exclude a shoe that's too big for him, that he can't walk in it. And as opposed to a shoe that's too small for him, that doesn't even cover most of his foot. And as opposed to a sandal, hamasulyam, which has no heel. We're going to Rashi, okay, here means the sole. Sandal hamasulyam, Rashi says two explanations of it. One is it means that it's missing its sole. And number two, it comes from a place called Masulyam, where they used to make them like that, without soles or whatever. Anyway, either way, so... I don't know, so that way at least you look like you're wearing shoes. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe it didn't have sole leather, maybe it had sole leather material. I don't know. Anyway, so you see that, so as long as it fits those criteria, as long as it fits him properly and it has a soul, then it's good enough even if it doesn't belong to him. The Gemara tells, Abaya have a koi kamed Rav Yosef. One time Abaya was standing in front of Rav Yosef, Aso Yivama Lachlitz, and Yivama comes to Chalitza. Amalei, so Rav Yosef says to Abaya, have le sandalach, give him your sandal. Yav le sandal of the smaller. So Abaya gave him his left sandal. Now Rashi says he did that on purpose. Because Abaya figured that l'chadchila you shouldn't be using a sandal that doesn't belong to the Yavam. L'chadchila you should be using one that belongs to the Yavam. So he deliberately gave Rav Yosef, or the Yavam himself, the left one, like to show I disagree with what you're doing over here. Marsha explains a little differently, not so much that he's saying I disagree, but he's saying if you're saying that it doesn't really have to be his, well, then it doesn't necessarily have to be a right one either. It can just as well be a left one. Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef tells him, no, Emedir Amar Rabbanan Di'evet. Yes, the Rabbanan said you can use the left one on the right foot, Di'evet. L'chadchila mi'emer, mi'amar. Who says you can do it l'chadchila? Amalei, so Rabbi tells him, nu, yichachi sandal shena shaloi nami. So saying the same thing as far as a sandal that's not his. Emedir Amar Rabbanan Di'evet l'chadchila mi'amar. It's only Di'evet, but why l'chadchila? Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef tells him, that's not what I meant. Hachi kamin alach. What I meant when I said give him your shoe, havle the acne lay. Don't just give it to him. Be machne to him, so it actually becomes his. And that's what we do nowadays. That a beis din has a chalitza shoe of their own, and they're machne to the yavam.
Meaning,
I guess he lifts it up, or they do a kinyan chalitza or whatever. Then the Mishnah continued sandal shleitz, that if you use a wooden sandal, that it's kosher v'di'evet. Man Tana, who's the Tana that says this? So we had an Aleph. Omer Shmur Rav Meir, that would be according to Rav Meir, the Tanana Kitei Yotze V'Kavshalei Divin Rav Meir, Rav Yosi Yoser. We had the Macholikus about the wooden leg on Shabbos, Rav Meir versus Rav Yosi. So according to Rav Meir, it's a proper shoe, you can wear it on Shabbos. Avod Shmuel, Omer, but Avod Shmuel says no, but Mechupa'er, the Mishnah is talking about a wooden shoe that's covered with leather. But Divin Hakol, and then it's according, everybody would agree that it's fine, even Rav Yosi. Amar Papi Mishmeder Rafa, sandal hamusker leitachlitz by a sandal that has been quarantined because of tzaras. Now we learn in Parshas Tazria that clothes and leather items can get tzaras also. And the basic rules with them are you quarantine them for a week or 2 weeks sometimes, and you see whether the tzaras spreads, changes color, persists or whatever. And then in some cases you have a period of time where it's quarantined, and then there comes a point where it has to be burnt.
So after the quarantine.
If the tzaras still stayed or grew or whatever, So sandal on musker. So if the sandal is musker, it's been quarantined because of tzaras. Loi tachlitz, you should not use it for chalitza. B'chatzchila. V'im kol tzachalitza tzachshera. But if you did, then b'di'evit, it's okay. But sandal on muchlot loi tachlitz, but once it's muchlot, once already the tzaras has been confirmed, it lasted for 2 weeks already and the tzaras has stayed or gotten bigger, and then it has to be destroyed. Loi tachlitz boi, then you can't use that for chalitza. V'im chol tza chalitza tza psula. And if you do, then the chalitza is pasul. Why? Because at that point, not because it doesn't belong to you. The reason is, Rashi says, because it has to be burnt. And the din is, when you have something that's supposed to be burnt, we consider it as if it's already burnt. So therefore, it doesn't have the shear. We said before that the shoe has to have a minimum size that's big enough to fit his foot and not too big. Here, it doesn't have the size anymore. It's effectively burnt already. Mace, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. You're telling me that something that's supposed to be destroyed because of tzaras is considered like it's already destroyed, but a Mishnah says in the Goyim, bayis hamusker, a house that is quarantined, again, houses can have tzaras too, mitame mitoichoi, then it becomes tome from the inside, meaning if you touch the inside of it, or if you have something inside it. Muchlat mitoichoi umeachorom. A house that's mukhlat, where already the tzaraf has been definitively established, where it's already, in the case of houses, you have to wait 3 weeks, and then the house has to be torn down, then it's metame both from the inside and the outside. So there, if you touch the outside of the house, you also become tame. The zevizem
means outside?
Means outside, yeah. And both kinds, both the muskur and the muchot, are matame. If you walk into the house, the Mishnah describes over there, if you walk in, if you stay only a short time, only you're tame. If you stay there, then your clothes become tame as well. But anyway, the point is, you're calling it a house. If you're telling me that something that's supposed to be destroyed because it's tzarach is considered like it's already destroyed, you have to have the pasuk says he comes into the house, he becomes tameh, and here there's no house. The answer is no. Shiny hasam, it's different in that case. It's different in that case. Da'amakrov and nosas at the bayis. The pasuk says you should tear down the house, meaning after the b'shach that it's a kori bayis, even when it has to be torn down, it's still considered a house. Yeah, in that case, there is a kosuv that is still considered a house and it's still considered to have the size of a house, even though until it's actually torn down. Yeah. Okay, Toshma, come, I'll bring another proof also from the dinim of Taras. Matlus shiyesh be'sholosh al sholosh. If you have a piece of cloth that is at least 3 by 3 in bois, which we learned back in Shabbos and in a few other places, the minimum size for it to be in Kabbal Tumah. Half a piece ain't by kazayis, even though the size of it is less than a kazayis, let's say it's made out of a very thin material. Kivit shenichnas rubel abayis tar, once most of it goes in, if it has taras, once most of it goes into a house that's tar, timasahu, it makes the house tameh. My love mukhlatis, lahura, we're talking about over here a piece of cloth that's mukhlat, that it's got to be burnt because of the taras. And no, blameless geres. No, you could be talking about that it's only been quarantined, it's only in the first week. It doesn't have to be burned yet, so there's no lack of shiur. Okay, the question is, yahachi aim a sefer. Well, if that's what you're saying, that's only talking about musker. How about the next part of the Mishnah of the Zaisa? How you become a zaisim? If it's the other way around, what if this 3 by 3 cloth has the volume of many kazaisim, so it's made out of a thick material? Kibin shenichnas mera kazayis, the bayis tar. Then as soon as the kazayis of it, even if that kazayis is less than 3 by 3 of the weave, goes into a house, timasahu, then it makes a tari. Now, if you say that the Braitha is talking about a piece of cloth that's mukhlat, then I understand why even a kazayis of it that's less than 3 by 3 would be matame, because anything that's mukhlat, a person or cloth or whatever that is mukhlat, that's definitively tame tzaras, is considered like a mess. And just like a kazayis of a mess is matame, so with this. Where do we learn that it's compared to a mess? So we have when Miriam got tzaras over there, so Aaron says to Moshe, please daven for her. I'll not eat kamesh. You shouldn't be like a dead person. Meaning, if she definitively has tzaras, she'll be considered like a dead person. You see that tzaras is like a mess. Ela yamet musgeres. But if you say the piece of cloth is only musker, it's only in quarantine. Amayit kish lemes. It's not compared to a mess. Why would a kazayis of it be metame? The answer is, again, shiny hosom, d'omar krov, a sarif as a beggar. No, in that case, you're right, it could be talking about mukhlat, the piece of cloth really is, definitively it has saraf, the saraf has lasted for 2 weeks, you have to burn it. But,
when it says less.
So therefore, even a kazayis of it is metame, as long as the whole thing is 3 by 3, and you stick a kazayis of it inside the house, it becomes tame. Why, again, shiny hosom, you have another xeris akosim, d'omar krov, a sarif as a beggar, the pasuk says you should burn the clothing. Again, after the bashaf sarif, a kari beggar, which means, even when it has to be burnt, it's still called a beggar.
Like the house,
yeah. Okay, the question is, in that case, why are we saying that the house and the beged are exceptions, and the usual rule is that anything that's supposed to be burned is considered like it's burned, and therefore we say the shoe is posel, say the other way around, that we learn from that just like their matame, like Xeris HaKosuv, so also they have their shear for all the purposes as Xeris HaKosuv.
Meaning,
in other words, back to Chalitza over here, you could use a shoe that has saras, and it would be fine. So it's Isser b'Tumah loy gamrinin, because you can't learn a case of Isser from a case of Tumah. Here we're talking about a matter of Isser v'Heter, that she's also to everybody else, she's also the Shuk, she needs to be made mutter through the Chalitza. Tumah has odd dinim in it sometimes. The whole concept of Tumah and all the dinim of Tumah are really a chiddush. She says they're unique in the Torah. You can't necessarily derive from those for other areas in Halacha.
You cannot apply Tumah.
You can't apply something. Just because you find that the Torah says they're Tumah does not mean you can apply that to other areas in Halacha.
And Mikramanan, there's no on this.
No, so that's the thing. That's what we're saying before. So far what we're saying is that a sandal on Mukhot you cannot use, and it would be possible B'diyev, even B'diyev. Therefore, the Rabbanan made Exeda was saying that you should not use one that's Muskir, that's quarantined, because you might end up using one that's Mukhot. However, Amar Rabba, Hilchasa, the bottom line, the halacha is, Echad sandal muskir, v'echad sandal shemachot, whether it's muskir or whether it's machot, the echad sandal shal avedis kechavim, or whether it's a sandal of avedis zara, which means Rashi says that you have they put it on the statue before they move it around from place to place, so the legs of the statue don't get damaged. All those loy tachlets, you should not use them for chalitza. But if you did, b'diavad, the chalitza is kosher. Why? Because in the case of the ones with saras, the fact is it's not yet burnt. We don't hold of this business that we're saying tatusi michtas shuri, that we consider it as if it's already cut down. It's not. It's still there. So therefore, you can use it. The one from Avodah Zarah, Rashi explains. So Rashi says we're talking about that even though it's also b'hanah because you use it for Avodah Zarah, but it's possible to be mevatel it. You can have a goy be mevatel it, say that I'm not interested in using it for Avodah Zarah anymore, and then anybody can use it. Tosfos has a very, very long discussion about it, and they end up saying that we're talking about over here actually that no. Before you mevatel it, you're taken not allowed to use it, because also by no. After you mevatel it, the point is, you shouldn't use it l'chatchila because it's mir stick, it was used for avodah zarah, it's disgusting to use it for a mitzvah. But in the end, if you did, since the goy was mevatel it already, then fine. What about, on the other hand, if the shoe was actually offered to the idol? You remember, we all remember the issue a few years ago about the hair that was being offered to idols in India over there, and it created a whole problem. So this shoe was actually offered to an Avodah Zarah. V'shal irni dachas, or it comes from an irni dachas, which also is supposed to be burnt. V'shal zakin osi l'chvaydoi, or that's made for zakin, for an old man, for his cover, that's made to be used as part of his tachrichim, so it's not meant to be walked in. Loi tachlit, those you can't use for chalitza. V'imchol tachalitza sepsula, and if you did, then the chalitza is possible even b'diyavin. Because those we have to consider as though they're already destroyed, or in the case of the zakin osi l'chvaydoi, it's not made for walking in. So what are you telling me? The one that's made for tachrichim is possible because it was never made to walk in. In that case, the beidinim nami lavli lochavid. Well then, a chalitza shoe that belongs to beis din is also not meant for walking in. They don't use it for walking in; they use it specifically for chalitza. Amalei. So Rashi tells him that's not a big deal. Ilum maske veshlucha the beidina. Because what if the shliach beis din takes this shoe and walks with it? Mikafid alei dayana. Would the dayanim mind? No. It's meant to be used for chalitza, but it's not like they mind if the shliach beis din. It's usable as a shoe. And in fact, in Shulchan Aruch it says that nowadays what you do is when you give the shoe to the yavam, you have to have him walk around in it a little bit. Not so much because of the lucha of it, because you're saying you don't really need that, but because, and not so much to be machnet to him, but to make sure it fits him properly. Make sure it fits him, because you said it has to fit him properly.
They have different sizes.
Yes, so actually a beis din does have to have chalitza shoes of different sizes, yeah. One more thing, and then we'll finish. The Ritva asks the question: if we're saying that it has to be a shoe that was made for walking, how could we say before that you could use a shoe that was made to put on the feet of an Avodah Zarah? They don't walk. And the answer is, he says you have to be talking about it was originally made as a regular shoe. Somebody used it l'chatchila as a regular shoe, and then he donated it to be used for this purpose. Yeah.